VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Pro-democracy demonstrators are in the streets of Hong Kong again, ignoring the pro-Beijing city government's refusal to issue permits for all but one of four marches. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has our report.
Police leveled tear gas canisters at a crowd of some 1,000 people in an evening standoff at a commuter rail station in Tai Wai in the northern region of New Territories. In a separate incident, tear gas was fired at protesters who surrounded a police station on the northern side of Hong Kong's harbour. Also, protesters have blocked an entrance to a tunnel that carries traffic under the harbour. Hong Kong is in its ninth week of demonstrations that began in response to a proposed extradition law, but have expanded to include other grievances and demands for more democratic freedoms. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Police in New York City say disgraced billionaire financier Jeffrey Epstein, jailed on federal sex trafficking charges involving young girls, has committed suicide in his jail cell. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has a report.
The medical examiner's office in Manhattan is confirming the death of Jeffrey Epstein. A former law enforcement official tells the AP Epstein was found dead this morning at the Manhattan Correctional Center. The 66-year-old had pleaded not guilty to sex trafficking charges and was facing up to 45 years in prison if convicted. His arrest last month launched separate investigations into how authorities handled his case when similar charges were brought against him in Florida more than a decade ago. Labor Secretary Alex Acosta resigned after coming under fire for overseeing Epstein's plea deal when he was U.S. attorney in Miami. I'm Ben Thomas.
Typhoon Lekema made landfall today in eastern China, and it was deadly to at least 13 people. 16 others are missing. State media say a million people were evacuated as the storm approached. Hundreds of flights and dozens of trains have been canceled. The storm still carries winds up to about 190 kilometers an hour. From Washington, this is VOA News. There was a tragedy in eastern Tanzania today when a tanker truck exploded as people tried to siphon off its fuel. At least 57 were reported killed, with many others burned in the blast. It happened in the town of Morogoro, about 200 kilometers from Tanzania's economic center of Dar es Salaam. The Associated Press says it was told that scores of area residents had been drawn to the tanker when it was disabled by an accident. North Korea has once again launched missiles into the sea from its east coast, the fifth such test in just over 2 weeks. It is not clear how far the two rockets traveled, though South Korean and U.S. intelligence officials say they appear to be short range. The launches came just hours after U.S. President Donald Trump said again he is not concerned about the tests. North Korea has been routinely firing short-range ballistic missiles the past 2 months, repeatedly voicing its anger about the resumption of joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports more than a half million Rohingya refugees living in Bangladesh have received new identity documents designed to give them better access to aid. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
An estimated 900,000 Rohingya refugees are living in overcrowded, squalid camps in the town of Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh. Most of them fled there 2 years ago to escape persecution and violence in Myanmar. A joint registration project by Bangladeshi authorities and the UN Refugee Agency will give identity documents to more than 500,000 of the refugees, many for the first time. The data on these fraud-proof biometric cards will give national authorities and humanitarian partners a better understanding of the population and its needs.
That was Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA in Geneva. A refugee agency spokesman says the new registration cards indicate Myanmar as the refugees' country of origin, and that, he says, safeguards their right to return to their homes when they leave Bangladesh. In a fresh blow to world markets, President Trump says the next scheduled round of trade talks between the United States and China might not happen, that he could decide to cancel the discussions because, he says, he's not ready to make a deal, which he insists Beijing badly wants. Later, White House trade advisor Peter Navarro said Washington is still planning for a resumption of talks. Economists warn the trade war between the world's two biggest economies could hurt global growth. The International Monetary Fund and World Bank have downgraded their growth forecasts for the year. Amazon says it's investigating claims of worker abuse at a factory in China after a labor rights group said teenage employees were required to work night shifts and overtime hours for low pay. More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
This time around, it's not emotional, it's passive. We're not doing it behind state security service. We have put them on notice. We want them to come and justify their action before the same court.
A Nigerian defense lawyer challenges a court order permitting a security agency to detain an opposition leader for 45 days.
What the people are asking for is that power to go to the root of the population. Let them decide certain things. You know, for example, let the governors be elected, not appointed.
A prominent Cameroonian Catholic priest calls for an honest dialogue to resolve the ongoing crisis.
They say you should not protest in anywhere which is near a government office. How can you do that? Is the government there for us or for them themselves? This is our right. It should be our right to protest anywhere we want to protest.
And the Togolese opposition coalition reject a new law banning protests near government institutions. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A Nigerian human rights lawyer is legally challenging a court order which permits the Department of State Security to detain opposition presidential candidate Omoyele Sowore for 45 days. Femi Falana, who is the defense lawyer for Sowore, contends that the petition from the government agency that led to the court's order was illegal and unconstitutional. Omoyele Sowore, presidential candidate for the opposition party, the African Action Congress, in the last general election, had called for a revolution. To learn more about his court challenge, I reached defense attorney Femi Falana.
Since the order was obtained behind Sowore and his lawyers, we decided to approach the same court because we strongly believe that a number of material facts were not made available to the court. And also the fact that it was in their custody already before the State Security Service went behind him to obtain an order. You know, we have a number of grounds on the basis of which we're asking the court to set aside the order so that Sowore can regain his freedom.
Government officials that I spoke with are of the view that Sowore's statement of revolution poses a security threat, hence the need to detain him and ensure that the country maintains its stability and territorial integrity.
And that is a mere red herring in the sense that the mere call for a revolution does not constitute a crime under our law. It is the actual, actions taken or your activities that can now confirm that you want to cause a revolution. And by the way, all those who took part in the demonstration in Lagos, in Calabar, and Oshogbo have been arrested and charged with unlawful assembly, not terrorism, not treason. In his own case, he did not even participate in the protest when he was arrested. We arrested those who actually took part in the protest, who actually went to the street calling for revolution, have merely been charged with unlawful assembly, which, by the way, cannot be sustained once the law has recognized my right to protest for and against the government. I mean, you cannot turn around and criminalize my action for exercising my freedom of expression and my freedom of assembly.
Now, has Sowore officially appointed you or contracted you to be his official defense lawyer?
I've been his lawyer since he was a student. He was an undergraduate in the University of Lagos.
What do you think are your chances of success of challenging this court's decision that granted the DSS the permission to continue to hold Sowore for at least 45 days?
Well, essentially, the challenge, pertains to the violations of his right to liberty, his right to fear again, you can't make, our belief is that you can't just keep somebody in detention in Nigeria for 45 or 90 days, you know, without a charge. The law says the Constitution, which takes precedence over any other law under the Terrorism Act, provides that anybody arrested in a place like Lagos must be taken to court within 24 hours. Up to now, he has not been charged with any offense, as mandated by the Constitution.
Are you saying that the government is using terrorism or perhaps coming up with charges as a pretext to silence Sowore?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, you know, for instance, while he was in detention, the police came out, the State Security Service announced that they have evidence that he had engaged in terrorism, treasonable felony and treason. So if you already have concluded your investigation and you have come to such far-reaching conclusions, then what investigation do you want to carry out again? You know, what investigation? You have already told the whole world that we have the evidence. What you then do under the law is to file a charge.
So what's next after you file this motion? What's next for him?
No, we have already served the processes on the State Security Service, and we are sure the court will give us a date for hearing any moment from now. But Monday and Tuesday are public holidays in Nigeria, you know, for the Muslim festival. And I think after, by the time we resume work on Wednesday, we should be able to get a date to argue the application. This time around, it's not a motion ex parte. We are not doing it behind the State Security Service. We have put them on notice. We want them to come and justify their action before the same court.
Femi Falana is a Nigerian defense and human rights lawyer. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Lagos. A prominent Cameroonian Catholic priest has called for an intellectually honest dialogue in the effort to resolve the ongoing crisis in the English-speaking parts of the country. Cardinal Christian Toumi, Emeritus Archbishop of Douala, also says a return to the federal system of governance could help resolve the crisis. But Issa Chiroma Bakari, a government minister, rejected the federalism system, saying it will further embolden the separatist agenda, which is to succeed and establish their own country. To learn more about his call for dialogue, I reach Cardinal Christian Toumi, Emeritus Archbishop of Douala.
You know very well that at reunification, we voted for federalism. And we were a federal state for 11 years without a hitch, without any problem. So our problem started from the moment the name of the country was changed to the Republic of Cameroon. You know, when we put aside the federal system. If we had continued with the federal system, we would not have had the problems we have now. The federal system is a better form of government for us.
The current situation we have now, do you think that both sides will contemplate to have the federal system being brought back? Because at the moment, both groups are stuck in their ways, that it is either their way or the highway.
No, that is why we are calling for a round table discussion. And we should come together and put our ideas together and argue them out. And with what I would call intellectual honesty, we should be ready to accept the system that is good for us, objectively. That's what I say is my opinion. It is not a doctrine.
Per your opinion, the government has designated the Amber Boys on the Ambazonians as terrorists trying to undermine the integrity and the political stability of Cameroon. Now, by designating them in that way, that prevents them, some say, from holding negotiations or dialogue with them in the attempt to resolve this crisis. So how do Cameroonians get out of this pickle, if I may ask you?
No, I think we should all be ready to accept the opinions of one another. Nobody has the absolute solution. We should bring our ideas together and argue them out in all honesty. They should bring the arguments for what they think and be ready to accept or see the arguments of the others. We should argue the points out. That is why We think that a national coming together would be of a very great importance.
Well, Cardinal, let me ask you this. Pragmatically speaking, how realistic is a return to the federal system that Cameroon used to be to ensure the country remains peaceful and united?
Quite a number of Cameroonians on both sides of the Mongo, that is to say Francophones and Anglophones, are for the federal system. You know, after the coming together at the tripartite in 1996, Paul Biya, the president, who is still there, wrote out the constitution, and if we had put that into practice, we would not have been where we are now, I am convinced. It is sort of a federal system, you know, having many states. And so we would know, we call it here decentralization of the state. When you look at the definition of a decentralized state and a federal state, the differences are not so much. If we come to what the people are asking for is that power should go to the root of the population. Let them decide certain things. You know, for example, let the governors be elected, not appointed, for example. And small, you know, houses of parliament where people would discuss their local problems and look for solutions to themselves. Not everything coming only from, you know, from Yaoundé, from the capital.
Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari said that you are trying to foster the separatist agenda and that federalism is the anti-chamber of secession. How do you respond to such criticism, Cardinal Toomey?
No, I don't agree with him. That is also his opinion. He's free to say what he likes, but that is not what I think.
Cardinal Christian Toomey is the Emeritus Archbishop of Douala. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian commercial capital, Douala. The coordinator for the Togolese opposition 14-party opposition coalition says the group will not accept a new law which seeks to prevent protests near government institutions. Bridget Ajamagbo Johnson says the measure contravenes the constitution, which guarantees freedom of speech and assembly. The government maintains that the law will help with efforts to combat terrorism to ensure public safety. Bridget Ajamagbo Johnson, a coordinator of the 14-party coalition, told me the new measure is unacceptable.
Our parliament came out with two laws, one relating to internal security issues, and the second one was a reform of the law on a public protest. And they said that to resolve the internal security problems that we have, you know, with terrorism, they should limit the enjoyment of public freedom. And they said from now on, you don't have the right to protest in some places. The limitation is so important that you can just say that they want to forbid the exercise of public freedom. And you can understand that we cannot agree.
Is your group saying that the new laws will undermine the constitution, which guarantees freedom of assembly and freedom of speech?
Exactly. This is what we are saying. And we say we will see what we can do. We cannot accept this law. And we will take action.
What action are you going to take?
Oh, allow me to not say what we intend to do.
Supporters of the government and the ruling party are of the view that it is essential for Togolese to be protected, and the core mandate of the government is to protect life and property, and that is exactly what they are doing. There's a problem, they need to solve it, and they are solving it. So you shouldn't have a problem with that. How do you react to that?
We say that any time we protest, we do it peacefully and
this is a lie to say that those protestations are a threat to private goods and so on. It's just a way for the government to prevent people to exercise their rights because they think it will help them to stay in power. But they will see that we will not stop fighting this regime. This regime which has done too much bad, you know, to the people.
But Mrs. Ajimagbo-Johnson, there are concerns that protests and demonstrations your organization has organized have turned out to be violent, and that members of your group, when they go on demonstration, they clash with the police who are just there to enforce the law.
I just respond to this by saying that this is now that they have adopted this law that they will push people toward violence.
So that is the thing. You think they brought the law to incite people to be violent so they can crack down on them?
Yeah, if they don't have choice, you don't have any choice to protest according to the law. So the only thing you can do is to use violence, to use way of protest that will come against the law, will go against the law, because this is a human right to protect when you think you need to protest. They say you should not protest anywhere which is near a government office. How can you do that? Is the government there for us or for them themselves? This is our right. It should be our right to protest anywhere we want to protest.
Bridget Ajimagbo-Johnson is the coordinator of the 14-party Togolese Party Coalition. She spoke with me from the Togolese capital, Lome. The president of the Tanganyika Law Society says members of the group are legally combating attempts by the authorities to undermine the constitution by violating the rights of citizens. Reacting to a joint statement by the British High Commission and the American Embassy, Dr. Rugemeleza Nshala says there's evidence of the growing erosion of legal due process in the country. His remarks come after the British High Commission and the American Embassy expressed concern about the erosion of due process. Dr. Rugemeleza Nshala told me the recent arrest of a journalist could have been the last straw, which led to the unusual joint statement by the two embassies.
Yeah, of course it is somewhat unprecedented, but it's also a welcome development. I think when you have two embassies making such a kind of a statement, it shows that all is not well in our country, because the kind of arrests that are taking place in the country are basically, it's like you arrest people first, then you start investigating. So this is not what's supposed to be. In any criminal justice system, you're supposed basically to arrest people after you have almost completed your investigation, and you don't arrest people for the sake of it, but rather you have all the reasonable grounds to believe that a crime has been committed. That has not been the case of the recent past. Many people have been arrested without reasonable grounds, and they've been languishing in remand prisons for a very long time. And most of the embassies are kept quiet while some people were complaining. But I think the arrest of Mr. Eric Kabendera basically was the last straw, which eventually forced the two embassies to issue a joint statement. So it shows that all is not well with our criminal justice system in Tanzania.
I understand. Some members of the Tanganyika Law Society defend some of these people who you said have been arrested without due process. So if your members are being confronted with this, how is the Tanganyika Law Society engaging the government to address some of these concerns?
Of course, all that the government is now undertaking the criminal justice reform program. So we've been actively participating into it, but the reforms will take a long time to come into operation. So until those reforms are enacted or become law, the current legal system or our criminal procedure system is not that good. It allows a lot of impunity. The police people have been arresting people. The way the law stands now, anybody who's arrested is supposed to be brought before the court of law within 24 hours. But you see people now are being arrested and they stay in remand prison even for 7 or even 2 weeks without being taken to court. So for us, we have been alarmed and we have been making some noises to the government and to other quarters that they are not doing well. For some of the people, the lawyers have been filing the habeas corpus applications, basically trying to demand that the arrested individuals should be brought before the courts of law and be properly charged. And what has been happening is that whenever the habeas corpus applications have been filed, then you find that the police people just immediately release them. So they render the applications meaningless in the sense that they've been overtaken by events because the individual who was arrested is now has been freed, has been properly charged. So we are concerned with that.
Some people have also been expressing concern about the violation of the rights of Tanzanians by a clampdown of the government on freedom of speech, freedom of expression, by using newly crafted laws to suppress dissent. Is this a concern of the Tanganyika Law Society?
Yes, it is, because we have a very, very liberal provision in our constitution which basically guarantees the freedom of speech. But you find we have the laws which have been enacted, like the Media Services Act, and before that we had the Newspapers Act. Those are not good laws. And in fact, the South African Court of Justice recently ruled a certain provision of the Media Services Act were in violation of the South African Treaty, which basically we might, by extension, might say also they are in violation of Article 18 of our Constitution. So basically, we have been alarmed with that. We've been going to court. We've been managed to pass on, I've litigated like 4 cases against the banning of newspapers, and I think we have so far prevailed in 3 of them. And the government has tried to appeal, but the appeals have failed. Even though the Media Services Act does not empower the minister to ban any newspaper in Tanzania, but you still find that the newspapers are being banned. The minister doesn't have any power to ban any newspaper in Tanzania. But still, because out of impunity, and knowing that nobody is going to take action, the government has been banning newspapers willy-nilly. And so that's not very good.
Dr. Rugemeleza Inshallah is the president of the Tanganyika Law Society. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Ozagui, considered the most popular singer-songwriter in the Central African Republic, recently went to the UN's European headquarters in Geneva to awaken the world to the struggles faced by his country, which has been mired in civil war since 2012. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Ozagan sings about the difficulties confronting his people. He sings about the constant search for food in a country where insecurity prevents people from farming and harvesting their crops. He sings about people fleeing into the bush to escape the violence of armed groups. He sings about the same armed groups manipulating vulnerable people into doing their bidding so they can feed their families. The musician and activist recounts the difficulties he himself has faced in life. He says he was forced to quit school in the 4th grade to earn money, as he was the sole support of his mother and 4 younger sisters. He tells VOA there were no jobs in the CAR, so he went to Brazzaville in search of work.
Et moi, ils m'ont refusé, voilà, tu ne peux pas travailler avec nous, tu es trop petit. Et c'était comme ça que je me suis retrouvé dans la rue.
Ozagan says no one would hire him because he was too young and too small. He says he had no choice but to live on the streets. He says he spent 4 years as a homeless street child, scrounging for food, dodging the police, fighting off the mosquitoes. What saved him, he says, was his music. He says this experience also sensitized him to the plight of street children and prompted him to eventually create a foundation to help homeless youngsters.
Ils sont en nombre de 32 dont 10 musulmans.
The musician notes money raised through his concerts helps to support 32 homeless children, including 10 Muslim children who live in a separate district in Bangui. He explains Muslims and Christians live in segregated areas in the capital. He says he is working to end this separation and to bring the two communities together. The United Nations calls the Central African Republic a forgotten crisis. War has displaced more than 1 million of the country's 5 million population. Nearly half that number have found refuge in neighboring countries. The World Food Program reports currently more than 1.8 million people are suffering from serious food shortages. WFP spokesman Hervé Verhoezel says these people do not know from where their next meal will come.
Le programme alimentaire mondial aujourd'hui nourrit 600 000 personnes par mois. Nous aimerions augmenter cela.
He says WFP distributes food rations to 600,000 people a month. He says the agency would like to increase that number to 800,000, but to make that possible, he says WFP urgently needs $35.5 million until the end of the year. In the meantime, Ozogan says he will continue to raise his voice in song on behalf of the 4.8 million Central Africans, half of whom continue to live in a state of physical and food insecurity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the spokesperson for the Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, says the main opposition group has ample evidence to prove beyond a shadow of doubt that the May 21 general election was rigged. Maurice Munthali says the party remains confident that the Constitutional Court would overturn the victory of President Atapita Mutharika. The court began a hearing on the legal challenge of the outcome of the presidential vote results on Thursday. For more on the court challenge by the opposition parties, I reach Maurice Munthali, spokesperson for the Malawi Congress Party, or MCP.
Our stand as Malawi Congress Party is that our turn is coming when the respondents will want to hear the preliminary issues to do with the case. But as Malawi Congress Party are so confident that we have enough evidence to challenge the elections that were announced on the 27th of May after the elections. We have enough evidence of fraud, irregularities, and rigging of the votes during the last elections. So we are confident this case will favor the Malawi Congress Party, even without having to say substantially what is happening in the court of law. But this is our confidence and this is our stand, because we believe the vote was stolen and we have evidence to that effect.
Despite your confidence and the evidence that you say the party has to present in court, you know, there's no precedent for this in the presidential election in Malawi. So people are questioning your confidence that it is unlikely that a court will rule in your favor. Your response to that?
It is our belief that this tendency has been there before. And if people thought that Malawi is going to ride on that horse of rigging of votes forever, history is going to be made in Malawi now. And the precedent is going to be made now. And that is why we are saying so confidently that this is the time that Malawi is going to make history, because we have evidence, I want to repeat, that the vote was rigged, the people's choice was stolen, and the history is going to be made. We have faith in our judiciary, we have faith in our judges, in the legal system of this country, and we believe that with what we are going to be presenting before the court and what has already been presented to them, history is going to be made, and the decision that was made on 27th May by the Electoral Commission is going to change.
Previously, opposition groups, including the MCP, have accused the judiciary or the court of not being fair. So what makes you confident that this time the judiciary will remain independent and rule based on the case that you presented before it, challenging the outcome of the presidential election?
We want to believe that we have a professional judiciary where there have been incidents that the judiciary has betrayed the people We want to believe that those are isolated cases, because even with the case at hand now, the judiciary will want to know and believe that we are dealing with a very sensitive matter, a national matter, and rights-based issue. So I think they are going to take all this into consideration, because we are not just challenging something which is small. We are challenging the leadership of this country, and that is a very serious case. And that is why even the judiciary will want to look at it from that angle as well.
Recently, the Public Affairs Committee, an interreligious group, met with President Arthur Peter Mutharika, scheduled to meet some of your leaders, including Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and UTM leader, former Vice President Dr. Silas Chilima. How did the meeting go, and what were the assurances to ensure the country's stability and maintains its territorial integrity?
I may not know exactly what the Public Affairs Committee discussed with the President Peter Mutharika or the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, because they have kept some of the information to themselves, saying they're going to disclose that at a later date. But as far as the Malawi Congress Party is concerned, the door for discussions is always open, only that this time around, we may not be talking or dialoguing on something that is already in the court of law. That would not happen, because already the fact that we are presenting our case before the court, that alone is dialogue. That alone is a discussion, because the court, we want to see how justice is going to be seen to prevail. And the issue to do with the Electoral Commission chair lady, Dr. Jenny Ansah, that may not be on the table for dialogue, because Malawians are saying she must go. And who is Malawi Congress Party to say she should remain?
Maurice Muntali is the spokesperson for the Malawi Congress Party, MCP. He spoke with me from Mzuzu. Muslims are looking for alternatives for the sacrifice as recommended by Prophet Muhammad on the day of the Eid Adha fast. Sheep, traditionally slaughtered, have become very scarce as a result of the Boko Haram conflict and separatist war in the country's main production areas. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Hundreds of Muslims are buying foodstuffs from the popular market called Marché Huitième in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé in preparation for the Feast of Sacrifice. In Cameroon, large numbers of sacrificial animals, especially sheep, are killed and their meat distributed to the poor as a religious tradition in Islam. 41-year-old Abdulaziz says for the first time in 20 years, he will not have a sheep to sacrifice. He says with the scarcity of sheep, he has decided to buy either a she or he goat. He says he does not want to miss a religious rite just because prices of the few sheep he has seen have increased drastically. He says the prices of goats are also increasing. Aziz said because of the scarcity, some families are buying chickens, leading to arguments on whether the substitution is religiously correct. Muhammad Abubakar, assistant imam of Yaoundé's central mosque, says Islam allows people to adjust with the changing times.
Celui qui est recommandé en premier, c'est le chameau. Celui qui suit, c'est le bœuf.
Imam Abubakar says the religion finds nothing wrong if Cameroon Muslims who cannot find the sheep they traditionally bought to slaughter in honor of Abraham's willingness to slay his son Ismail at Allah's request turn to goats and fowls today. He says the scarcity that started so many years ago with camels is now affecting cows and sheep. Most of the sheep sold in Cameroon towns comes from the area around the Central African state's northern border with Nigeria that has been suffering Boko Haram atrocities, or from the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions where separatists have been fighting to create an English-speaking state or neighboring Chad. Issa Chiruma Cameroon Minister of Employment and Vocational Training and a Muslim says the crisis the country is facing has had negative impacts on livestock production.
Le nombre de bœufs volés en territoire camerounais à la suite des agressions barbares.
He says many people have escaped from ranches in the far north region of Cameroon due to Boko Haram terrorism and from the English-speaking northwest region because of the war against separatist groups. He says on Cameroon's border with Nigeria alone, close to 5,000 cattle and an unknown number of sheep have been stolen by Boko Haram terrorists. In 2016, the World Bank approved a $100 million fund to help Cameroon improve the productivity and competitiveness of livestock production over 6 years. It said besides replenishing what had been lost as a result of the Boko Haram conflict, the program would help build resilience to climate change and improve the nutrition status of vulnerable populations. Last July, Cameroon began distributing 60,000 goats and sheep to young people in villages along the border with Nigeria to provide livestock for a basic income and replenish what has been lost in order to stop the Islamist militant group from recruiting the youths. More than 1,000 Bororos, who are indigenous people in Cameroon, have also fled their cattle ranches following repeated attacks and seizure of their cattle by separatists fighting for the creation of an English-speaking state. The Bororos say they are victimized and killed because they refuse to join the fight. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection, and you are hearing from Otile Brown with Baby Love. Sheba follows with Try My Love. Star Plus follows next with Olufumi, and then Shalamwana with Kokola. We end with Timi Dakolo with The Vow.
Kulinda mpenzi wangu we jiko langu kama mboni ya macho yangu nitakulinda mpenzi wangu achana nao achana nao achana nao hao wenye roho mbaya wanatusema vibaya achana nao achana nao achana nao hao wenye roho mbaya wana tusema vibaya. Baby love, wewe wangu mi wako wa moyo. Oh baby love, sije nicha kwa fitna na maneno yao. Baby love, wewe wangu mi wako wa moyo. Oh baby love, sije nicha kwa fitna na maneno yao. Gani moyo wangu na upendeza wendo furaha yangu wendo amani yangu weni jiko jiko langu kama mboni ya macho yangu nitakulinda mpenzi wangu weni jiko jiko langu kama mboni ya macho yangu nitakulinda mpenzi wangu achana nao achana nao. Jana no, hao wenye roho mbaya wanatusema vibaya. Jana no, hajana no, uachana no. Hao wenye roho mbaya wanatusema vibaya. Baby love, wewe wangu mi wako wa moyo. Oh baby love, sije nicha kwa fitna na maneno yao. Baby love, wewe wangu mi wako wa moyo. Oh baby love, usiki necha kwa fit na maneno yao. Baby love, wewe wangu mi wako wa moyo. Oh baby love, usiki necha kwa fit na maneno yao. Baby love, wewe wangu mi wako wa moyo. Oh baby love, usiki necha kwa fit na maneno yao. Chipo, yeah. nitakulinda mpenzi wangu. To make it move on you, but before
before you finally leave me, girl. Think about what you do to my world. Whatever you do to hurt me, baby, it's gonna drive me crazy. Please give me one chance to shoot. On a date down the aisle and be the first and the last girl to become my bride. You could be the one to make a fool of me, or you could be the one to be confusing me, or you could be the girl in the world that I know through the rough times gonna stay true to me. You could be my Juliet, I mean I have his looks, but I would still be your Romeo. You could be my princess, I'd be a charming prince at the service of only you. That's why I never wanna love another woman, that's why I know I'll never love another woman, that's why I can never love another woman, that's why.
That's why when I think about you leaving, I find myself grieving. Though it seems deceiving, I'm still believing. Girl, you stay with me forever. And I'll remain humbly kneeling while your heart is healing. Teardrops revealing the way that I'm feeling, girl.
Carlo, The Vow, and that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a canoe does not know who the leader is. When it turns over, everyone gets wet. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.